Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here, The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, everybody, welcome to The Tom Woods Show, episode 2394. I'm delighted to be joined by Paul Gottfried, Yale PhD, author of a zillion books, editor of Chronicles Magazine, which I highly recommend, chroniclesmagazine.org. Go get yourself a subscription. Support the good guys. And Paul, when I wrote to you the other day and said, would you like to come on and talk about the ADL with me? You responded gladly with two exclamation marks. And I think in all the years I've emailed you, it's the first time I've gotten two exclamation marks. So let's dive in. What's interesting about this, Paul, of course, is that we are supposed to cower before the ADL. And now all of a sudden, ban the ADL is a trending hashtag on what I still call Twitter. And there's all this negative attention that it's getting, and it's not used to that.
Yeah, I
think I'll keep this in. Let's keep this in.
Yeah, let's. Good. Okay, I get one on.
Makes it more authentic.
I'm delighted to hear that many people are joining me in my revulsion for the Anti-Defamation League. Something, by the way, which I have felt since the early 1960s, since I was in college. And at that time, I had a roommate whose father belonged to the ADL in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and quit because he was a Republican. And he said they presented Republicans as vicious anti-Semites and so forth. And he thought it was unfair since he was Jewish, but he was a Republican. But they have always been very partisan and very far on the left on cultural and social issues and have been able to sort of cover their tracks by being very, very supportive of Israel and saying that, you know, they're fighting anti-Semitism, which is a raging problem in the United States. As of last count, 14% of Americans are anti-Semitic. Of course, I'm not quite sure how they arrive at these figures or exactly by what criterion they decide this. And I'm willing to bet that a lot more people on the right are on their list than people associated with the left. In any case, they've always played these political games, and I've argued that they're in some ways much more dangerous for our constitutional freedoms than the Southern Poverty Law Center. Because the Southern Poverty Law Center is, you sort of see them what they are. They're left-wing ideological maniacs who go after anyone who disagrees with their woke leftist politics. In the case of the Anti-Defamation League, I think they conceal those positions better in the Southern Poverty Law Center by claiming to be fighting specifically against anti-Semitism, bringing up the Holocaust, which is real enough. But of course, the Anti-Defamation League has nothing whatever to do with the Holocaust, although I think the current director, Jonathan Greenblatt, has claimed that his grandfather, some relative of his, suffered under the Nazis. This may or may not be true, but the Holocaust is not exactly a burning issue these days. But it is one which touches the conscience of Christians, and then therefore Israel. And they have very conventional Zionist positions. And this, I think, gives them a certain influence, particularly in neoconservative circles. There was a cartoon that was published in one of the Murdoch newspapers, which offended Jonathan Greenblatt, who has been the director since 2015. And Murdoch apologized. Now, I doubt he would have done this for the Southern Poverty Law Center, but I think it is the Zionist connection of the Anti-Defamation League, which gives them, at least in certain circles, more respectability than I think the more honest Southern Poverty Law Center.
Now, of course, the ADL stands for Anti-Defamation League. And the other day, Elon Musk had a graphic saying, let's get rid of the anti and just call it Defamation League. You know, so it's interesting. As I say, we're supposed to cower before these people. I don't think they're used to this. I don't think they're used to somebody of his influence just telling them to go jump in a lake and maybe I'll sue you on top of it. They're not used to this. And just 3 days ago, the New York Times ran an article. I think it was an editorial. Elon Musk has crossed a line. And it begins by saying, you know, right wingers have long criticized the ADL for its quote, smears. So smears is in quotation marks because they're not really smears. We get to attack anybody we want on any grounds we want. But now he's like targeted them and he's criticizing them and that is crossing a line. No, it's not. I mean, these people cross a line every single day attacking people who have the wrong opinions. And you're right on the Zionism front. I think this is definitely one of those groups that doesn't distinguish between, I don't like some of the policies of the Israeli government, and I don't like Jews, period. They view this as more or less the same thing, and it really isn't.
Yeah, they have a bit of a problem there, however, because they are allied to the left. And most of the criticism of Israel comes from the left, right? And these groups about favored disinvesting in Israel, very often led by Reform rabbis, and they have to oppose these people, although they're allied with them on just about every other issue. So I think that does create a tension within the Anti-Defamation League. I think there's also a line was crossed in 2015 when they named Jonathan Greenblatt as successor to Abe Foxman, who had been the earlier director. Now, Foxman was a down-the-line leftist. It wasn't all that different from Greenblatt, with one important exception. Greenblatt worked for George Soros. He's a close friend of Soros. He's worked on a number of committees or groups that are paid for. He was closely associated with the Open Society. I actually made a list of some of these organizations that he was associated with. Impact, Economy, that this was organized with within the context of the Aspen Institute. Then the Democracy Alliance, which is another Soros Front organization, he headed that. When I looked him up at Wikipedia, it was almost like looking at Butler's Book of Saints. He was like a holy man. He was a businessman who was like wrestling with the implications of the Holocaust. By the way, he was born and grew up about 5 miles from where I lived in Trumbull, Connecticut. And I was unaware, of course, I'm 30 years older than he is, but when I went back and visited there, I was unaware that such a saint had been born there. But it is interesting the way he has been presented, and he sort of gives away his hand when he goes after, for instance, Elon Musk for criticizing Soros. He did that, I think, early in the summer. He attacked him on Twitter for having said something unkind about Soros. So that connection is very much there, and it's undeniable. I mean, he spent years working for Soros. So that comes out. Foxman did not have that kind of record. But I do remember that Abe Foxman once made a statement to the effect that American Christians are just not sensitive enough to the fact that many Jews suffered in the Spanish Inquisition. And Ralph Reed, what is he in the Christian Alliance or something like?
I was thinking Gary Bauer, Family Research Council. You know, Ralph Reed, who knows what he was in at any one time. But
right, but he apologized.
Of course he did. As soon as you said Ralph Reed, I knew.
He's an English Protestant descent. He has nothing to do with the Spanish Inquisition. But, you know, he decided that there might be some connection or somebody might make connections and apologize. No, I mean, it was almost behaved like a German. You apologize even for things you can conceivably have done. But Abe Foxman, you know, tried to play on Christian guilt all the time. Greenblatt just goes after anyone who's not on the left as an anti-Semite. And he attacked Trump recently, and he attacked Musk for allowing Trump back on Twitter. But his comment was that Trump is a vicious racist and anti-Semite, and we should not be deceived by his support for Israel. That's just the kind of front that allows him to engage in this bigotry. He didn't give any examples, by the way.
No, they never do.
No.
Or they're always fake or stupid or things he didn't say, or if you look at the context, that's obviously not what he meant. I mean, come on. You know, right. I have my criticisms of Trump, but they're smart. These are dumb. And the thing is that somebody like Greenblatt's not dumb. So I know he's not putting them forward because he's dumb. It's because he thinks they'll work, because he thinks the population is dumb, and he's not wrong about that, unfortunately.
You know, I agree.
Now, let me point out something that I know you deplore as much as I do, which is that the conservative movement, such as it is, will very often say things like, such and such was once a noble institution, but it has strayed. And if only we could get back to the original, or this movement was a noble movement at its beginnings. And if only we could get back to Susan B. Anthony or whatever, you know, it's always something like that. And then when you actually take the time to look at the beginnings, you say, no, the whole thing needs to just be abandoned. There was no noble beginning. So what I want to know is, as far as you know, did the ADL have a noble beginning where it started off as a legitimate organization the same way any group would have, like maybe an Italian anti-defamation league that doesn't like the way Italians are portrayed in the movies as gangsters or something. Did it have a noble beginning, or did it degenerate, or what?
Well, I really don't know that much about its beginning. I know it was organized in response to the situation of Leo Frank.
Yeah, I do want to talk about that.
Yeah, who was accused, and I think rightly so, of having murdered Mary Fagan, who worked in his factory, pencil factory, in Atlanta. Frank was not a poor, marginalized Jew. He was a very wealthy man who came from a prominent German Jewish family, prominent in Atlanta society. Although the death of Mary Fagan, which he probably was guilty of from what I've read, does set off very, very strong anti-Semitic reaction, particularly from Tom Watson, populist leader. And there was also a lot of money that was poured into his trial by Jacob Schiff and other Jewish financiers, mostly German Jews at the time. And they were also the people who I think were probably the German Jewish community organized the early Anti-Defamation League, basically to exonerate Leo Frank and then to fight what I think really was an anti-Semitic reaction to what happened. And he was lynched and was dragged out of prison and hanged. So one might say there were events that took place which were shocking. And they were shocking, I would guess, to the old Southern Jewish families, which, you know, thought they were very much part of the South. They'd fought for the Confederacy, they had pictures of Robert E. Lee, you know, their homes and so forth. And suddenly these people were like turning on them, at least the lower class Southerners. And I think the Anti-Defamation League, at least in its inception, could be defended. I mean, they really were reacting against an appalling outburst of anti-Semitism from people whom they trusted and, you know, with whom they had associated themselves. But the movement just keeps going. And then, of course, the rise of Nazism gives it a new impetus. My own knowledge of the Anti-Defamation League really starts in the 1950s, maybe late 1950s. It was associated with B'nai B'rith, which by then had become more or less sort of part of the liberal or the left establishment. It had not been that originally, but it had become that by the late 1950s. And the Anti-Defamation League was reliably on the side of the left wing of the Democratic Party, as it was generally B'nai B'rith at the time. Whatever the reasons this organization, B'nai B'rith or Anti-Defamation League, was brought into existence by the late 1950s, when I was actually just finishing high school, it was obvious that the Anti-Defamation League was allied with the left. It was also very strongly pro-Israel, and it would attack people who are critical of Israel, whether they were on the right or left. But it was also obvious that in American politics, they tended to side with the most left liberal candidate who had a chance of becoming a running mate in the Democratic Party. Very few of them were Republicans, and there was, in fact, nasty things said about Republicans, I would gather, from those who attended these meetings. Under the leadership of Abe Foxman, who for many years was director of the Anti-Defamation League, the organization definitely moved to the left. I responded in American Greatness to an Orthodox rabbi who was deploring, as you said, the way a great organization had deteriorated in recent years. And there was never anything, you know, nothing particularly great about the Anti-Defamation League before Jonathan Greenblatt got there. It was almost as bad under Foxman as it is now. But you were not getting as much pushback against them. And I think it is Greenblatt's association with Soros, and it is the fact that he is so obviously and vociferously on the left that is simply hard to deny. And it seems to be a personal vendetta against Musk and Trump both. And he's been sort of going after them. And he disapproves of the fact that Musk has opened up his website to people who are not on the left, to people who are conservative. And that this is something that Greenblatt objects to because it's dangerous for American Jews. I have no idea why. Many of the people writing are conservative are Jewish. But, you know, it's dangerous for them. And it is necessary to have somebody suppress those uncongenial Twitter messages.
You mentioned the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I think there's a parallel here in that for a long time, the Southern Poverty Law Center would demonize particular people. And even the right wing, so-called right wing, the neocons, the mainstream conservative movement, they would take whatever they were told by the SPLC as gospel. You're not supposed to associate with this person, then we won't. We're well-behaved conservatives, everybody. And boy, that's right. Really gotten them far, hasn't it? And then it got to a point, though, that they obviously overreached. They were obviously demonizing people who were not exactly really on the fringes anymore. It was okay if they were attacking people who obviously would be considered to be, quote, on the fringes. But even they were considering to be on the fringes, my friend Michael Bolden, who started the 10th Amendment Center. The 10th Amendment Center is not in any way, I mean, yeah, it's a danger to the regime and the ideas that it has. But there's nothing violent about it. There's nothing hateful about it. I mean, be serious. Michael Bolden is about the sweetest guy in the world. When Michael Bolden was going to have a hit piece written about him in Mother Jones, they sent somebody out to interview him, and the reporter just fell in love with him and decided, I have to defend him in my piece. So I've never, Paul, that would never happen with you and me. They would decide they hate us even more than they thought after talking to us. But the point is, he's demonized by the SPLC. But at this point, I think even the thick skulls of some parts of the conservative world have realized, wait a minute, this isn't just an identifier of haters. This is a partisan organization that hates our guts and is using its influence in the media and with law enforcement to target us. Well, I think the same thing could be happening with the ADL, that people are waking up to what's really going on here, that it's not just this harmless little group that's just trying to prevent people from being demonized or called names. They're doing the demonizing and the calling of names of people who are obviously not guilty of anything. So I'm hopeful, and I think I have some reason for it, that people might not be quite so naive about these organizations in the future.
No, I think you're right. And I think the parallel works. What happened with the Southern Poverty Law Center was that they began attacking neoconservatives.
Yeah.
David Horowitz was targeted by them and other neoconservatives. The lady from Somalia, what's her name? Ali.
I know the exact, her son Ali, something like that.
Hersey or.
Yeah.
Right. She was attacked as a hater because she criticized Muslims for circumcising women. And that showed she was a hater of Islam. Of course, if she attacked Christians, it would have been perfectly okay.
Yeah, A-okay, right, no problem.
Right? So that, I think, was a little too much for them. So they are not as reliant on the opinions of the Southern Poverty Law Center as they were before.
But doesn't that go to show the Southern Poverty Law Center was dumber than we thought? Like, they didn't understand the implicit relationship they had with the neocons, which is, we neocons will basically police our movement for you, but you just leave us out of it. They had that going for them until they blew it.
No, I think you're right. They're such fanatical woke leftists. They can't even think strategically anymore. And I think the same thing, you're right, may be happening at the Anti-Defamation League. There was more of a conciliatory spirit, if I remember, in Foxman. He would occasionally have a drink with Bill Buckley or something like that. But Greenblatt seems to be an absolute fanatic. And he has this association with Soros. So I think they may have just gone too far at this point. And it's obvious that he is attacking First Amendment rights. I mean, there's no question about this. He wants to censor anybody who disagrees with him. And he's angry at Musk for not doing that.
Yeah, that's basically what this whole thing boils down to. So now let's get a little bit personal here in terms of your own personal and professional associations. How close has the ADL smear machine come to you and your friends?
It has smeared some of my friends. Believe it or not, it has never laid a glove on me.
Well, today could be your lucky day, Paul. Who knows?
It doesn't make any difference. I'm treated the same way by the conservative establishment.
Yeah.
And I've never been directly attacked by the Southern Poverty Law Center, although they attacked the Mencken Club, which I was president.
Ah, see, I've been attacked, but I'm not on their list of bad guys. Like, Michael Bolden's on their list of bad guys, and he's much sweeter than I am. I'm much badder than he is, but I'm not on the list.
But it doesn't seem to make any difference, because I think the conservative establishment may view both of us as deserving to be on their list, the prescription list. We just didn't make it.
You just didn't make it, right. Yeah.
We probably should be there.
Yeah, yeah. They should send in their nomination form or whatever.
But no, I mean, right.
I'm sure you interacted with Pat Buchanan, and I'm sure the ADL had plenty to say about Pat Buchanan. For example.
Oh, yeah, they hate Buchanan. They consider him an anti-Semite. He's been attacked numerous times by the ADL.
And so...
Yeah, I have not been attacked as somebody associated with it, but I know that Pat has been attacked repeatedly.
Hey, everybody, quick message from Old Woods here. The historical moment we're in right now shares a lot more in common with 1917 than it does with 1776. I remember when I was younger, I used to think that if only I could teach the other side economics, then we'd be getting somewhere. Ah, naive little Tom. What we're facing is a force against which reason is powerless, a totalizing ideology that demands your unconditional surrender. Oh, and by the way, they also intend to colonize your children's minds. Now, let's face it, you and I are hated by the media, the entertainment world, the corporate CEOs, the mainline churches, all down the line, the universities, on and on, every major institution. What do we do about this? We could write some articles, we could write more books. Nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't seem to be getting us anywhere. I've written a lot of books over the course of my life, written a lot of articles, and I have a lot of people say, okay, I've absorbed the information. What do you want me to do now? Well, that's why I went ahead and created my School of Life. So far in my School of Life program, I've covered everything under the sun to help normal people navigate a world that hates them. So education, parenting, investing, real estate, medicine without the state, fitness, starting and growing an online or offline business, how to deprogram propagandized people, how to become a better communicator in speech and in writing, how to win when you're outnumbered, how to become cancel-proof, and a lot more. And on top of that, we meet in small groups to keep each other on track toward reaching our goals. The people you surround yourself with are what you yourself will become. And in those groups, you'll make valuable connections. And you'll also get good advice, knowledge, and encouragement from like-minded people. So when you run into that inevitable snag, you won't give up. You'll keep going. I'm looking for people who understand what time it is. We're on the verge of 1917, and it's time we acted. Check it out at tomschooloflife.com. What was the process by which they went from being probably, I assume at the beginning, a small group aimed at protecting the interests of the Jewish community in the sense of, you know, not wanting terrible things said about them, to the point now where, up until quite recently, if they would condemn somebody, it could mean the end of their careers or severe damage to their reputations. How does an organization get to that level?
Well, I think particularly since the Second World War, there's been a growing sensitivity among Christians that, you know, anti-Semitism is a bad thing and Christianity has some anti-Semitism in its background. And this, and of course, Jewish organizations have played on this to make Christians feel very, very guilty and somehow, in some strange way, complicit in the Holocaust, just the way, you know, we're all complicit in slavery or whatever else, or sexism, whatever else the left considers bad at this point. But the Anti-Defamation League sort of grows with the war against discrimination, prejudice. I think from the 1950s on, it probably has the same view of the world and the same social agenda as the authoritarian personalities authors, right? I mean that, you know, we're living in a society that is drenched in anti-Semitism, proto-fascism, all these other things. I think they pretty much take over that view, at least in terms of their effort to expand, to fundraise, influence the general society. I don't know whether this was the original intention. I doubt it. I think the people who organized during the Leo Frank crisis were probably very different from the people who give money to the Anti-Defamation League. But I think that it's clear that what it now is, it became many decades ago. I mean, this is not something that started in 2015 with the accession to power of its current director. We find almost all the same things happening under Abe Foxman's leadership on the preceding 20 or 30 years. So that we're looking at a very long-range trend. Why is it taken seriously? I think there's just people do not want to be attacked for anti-Semitism, right? This is a no-no. Just as you don't want to be attacked for racism, now for homophobia, being against transsexual transitioning, whatever else the LGBT community wants us not to be. But I think the crusade against anti-Semitism probably starts, you know, with the war against Nazism, then accelerates after Nazism is gone, right? And it is overtaken in times by other things. I mean, I don't think fighting anti-Semitism is really a big item for the ADL anymore. I think it is fighting sexism, fighting homophobia, whatever the LGBT agenda is, they buy into that. Okay, but they have to always claim they're fighting anti-Semitism, because if you don't support gay marriage, you're ipso facto an anti-Semite. So, I mean, all these things sort of come together in their worldview. And, you know, they're a quintessentially liberal organization, as liberal is now defined.
I guess the way they try to cover this is to say that any society in which any kind of minority feels threatened is a society in which Jews are potentially threatened.
Right.
And so, therefore, we want to have this kind of society. Well, let me ask you as a, well, play devil's advocate here. Now, you are Jewish, and if you hear people say things like Jewish people are disproportionately behind social trends that tend toward degeneracy, or Jewish people aim to enrich each other at the expense of the general population, and they're tribalistic, and so therefore they can't ever really be integrated into another society, do you not fear that that kind of language could, at least potentially, give rise to attitudes that would say the Jews have to be at the very least deported? I mean, this is highly unlikely in 2023, but I mean, wouldn't you be concerned about that kind of talk to the point where maybe you would want an organization that would go out trying to respond to claims like that?
Yeah, if I were living in Germany in 1934, I'd be very concerned. Living in the United States today, I am not. And sometimes the criticisms are just. I mean, Jews are disproportionately represented in the crazy left in this country. I look at, you know, these far leftist Democrats are almost always Jews. And it's a question that I think Jews have to ask. Jews who do not share these views. Why are all these crazy people whom we don't agree with and whose views are no way traceable to the Old Testament, Hebrew tradition, they're exactly the opposite. Why are Jews in America like that? Why are Jews, at least Jewish organizations in Germany, look very much like the Anti-Defamation League? And you know, I think you have to ask yourself, and I think thoughtful Jews, conservative Jews, do ask that question. We don't see this as a prelude to another Holocaust, that somebody raises these inappropriate questions. By the way, I don't think the Anti-Defamation League really gets that steamed, let's say, if black nationalists make anti-Jewish remarks. If white Christians do, they become very concerned. And of course, if someone like Abe Fox said, well, it's because it was white Christians committed the Holocaust or something of this. Well, I mean, it's highly unlikely that white Christians are going to do anything to you at this point. They're mostly very philo-Semitic. They've been backward to say nice things about Jews. On the other hand, blacks are much more likely to be anti-Semitic, according to the findings of the ADL, by the way, back in 2010, in which they show that blacks are three times more likely to dislike Jews than white Christians. So, I mean, you know, you have to sort of look at reality. One of the things I notice about Jews is that they do not, except for the very conservative ones or the ones living, Orthodox Jews living in Brooklyn around blacks, they will not admit there's black anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism is something peculiar to white Christians. In Germany, this lunacy has gone so far that the Central Committee for Jews in Germany attacked the AfD, which is the only conservative party, for wanting to limit Muslim immigration into Germany. They attacked them as Nazi, even though the victims of Muslim youth attacks are disproportionately Jews. So, I mean, it's almost suicidal at this point, this alliance with crazy, even anti-Semitic left. I mean, but, you know, if a white Christian were to ask me, you know, why are Jews disproportionately supporting these crazy leftist positions, I think it's a perfectly valid question. You know, I don't know how you can even avoid that question if you're, you know, thinking seriously about American politics.
Well, it seems to me like I'm half Armenian. And if a lot of Armenians were doing crazy things, I would say, look, I don't know what the story is, people. Sorry about that.
Right, exactly.
That'd be all. That would be it. There'd be no big big problem. We would just say it and move on. Like, come on, people.
Right, right. You know, if someone like Obama is embracing Louis Farrakhan, this is no problem for Jonathan Greenblatt.
Yeah,
why?
No problem. Yeah.
But if some white Christian says, gee, why are Jews disproportionately on the left? That's anti-Semitism.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You mentioned Germany, and I can only imagine what the ADL, if it were based in Germany, would have to say about this political party. Is it called Alternative for Germany?
For Germany, Alternative for Deutschland.
Yeah.
Alternative for Germany.
And they're polling pretty solidly. Are you able to say something about them? I don't know anything about them.
Yeah, they're a moderately conservative party by American standards. They were originally sort of founded by economics professors who thought their government was spending too much money. Then they took strong positions on immigration, which eliminated, particularly after Merkel just opened the doors, these migrants, seven or eight years ago, and they opposed that. And they refused to be anti-German. Being anti-German is like the state religion in Germany, and they're critical of this. They're basically made up of traditional Christian Democrats who broke with the Christian Democratic Party when Merkel dragged it all the way to the left on all the social cultural issues and on immigration. There's nothing far right about the Alternative for Deutschland. It's basically the party of Adenauer and other Erhard, other Christian Democratic leaders.
But I guess it's not a surprise that the reputation it has is, this has been, ever since I've been politically aware, you cannot trust the language that's used to describe anybody's political views, because if you're told somebody's on the left, that means they're on the far left. If somebody's a moderate, it means they're on the left. If they're described as conservative, it means they have two dissenting opinions from the middle.
Right.
I mean, you know, and if they're far right, they're just traditional conservative or whatever. So you don't even know. You just assume, you have to just shift everything over because nothing's ever the way it should be.
But you pick up the New York Post, and they refer to the Rassemblement National of Le Pen, Marine Le Pen, as a far-right organization. It's not. As I've argued at Peace for Chronicles, they take the same position on immigration as the Socialist Party in France did for a long time. And Eric Zemmour, who is now a neo-Nazi, although he's a Moroccan Jew, has the same position on immigration as the Communist Party in France after the Second World War. But the issues have simply changed. And anyone who opposes a multicultural society with open borders is obviously a fascist, right? I mean, this is the way political terms are defined. Also, I would say that if you look at every Western European country, as I argue in my book on anti-fascism, you have a woke leftist corporate capitalist alliance, as you have in France with La France en Marche, or you have in Germany with the Christdemokraten and even the Freie Demokraten. What you have are these coalitions of the left on every social cultural issue, and they favor, you know, state capitalism as the economic model which they embrace. And they're always organized against the fascist danger. There is no fascist danger, so they have to pick the party that is somewhat to the right of the other ones, and that party is not permissible in any kind of liberal democratic coalition that stands up for human values or human rights. So you have the Rassemblement National in France, Alternative for Deutschland, the Flams Bloc in Belgium, they all across Europe. Now, what happened in Italy was the unacceptable, the moral lepers took over the government. They actually won the fascist government with Meloni. So they have to find some new enemy to organize. It's all fake. It's a way of putting together something that looks like the East German Communist Coalition, which you now have all over Western Europe. You have a coalition of parties that are indistinguishable. They're all culturally leftist. They're not really socialist either. They're sort of state capitalist parties in which large corporations are part of the coalition. And then the woke left and the transgendered and all these feminists, all these other groups. And anyone who is outside of the coalition and is perceived as the enemy, you have to organize against. So, you know, where the Freiheitliche Partei Österreichs, the Freedom Party in Austria, is considered neo-Nazi because they want to limit immigration or something. But the problem is they're going to win the next election and take over. But there's no way that the Alternative for Deutschland can get into a coalition given the way they're kept out. And they are the neo-Nazis against whom everyone has to organize. And the Central Committee for Jews in Germany attack them the way the Anti-Defamation League does here.
Let's bring this a little bit closer to home. Let's suppose Chronicles magazine was condemned by name by the ADL. First of all, this would be a boon for you because you would get massive publicity from it. what would your response be?
Well, is it a boon? I would have to pay them some money in return for the favor. We would at least treble our subscription, right?
Yeah, because people had never heard of the magazine before.
No, I would just say it's junk. Who cares? I wouldn't even bother to respond. I think it's just utter nonsense. And I'm not going to change anybody's mind. And anybody who believes the Anti-Defamation League is not going to read Chronicles.
Yeah, anymore. I know. That's exactly right. That's exactly. You could spend your whole life chasing around all these accusations and saying, but wait a minute. Come on, be a man. At some point, you know, anybody you're appealing to is enough of a man and has enough IQ points to understand the dynamics of American society, for heaven's sake, right? The assumption is most people wish everybody else well. Okay, that is the reigning assumption that I have, and I think we all know is more or less the case. It reminds me actually of the incident, I think it was on the lawn of the White House or something. A reporter was asking Trump, you were called a racist for, I forget what it was, and he said, what, who? Who's calling me a racist? And they said, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. And he physically waved them and said, who cares? He just moved on. That is the correct response, everybody. I don't care if you like Trump or not. He gave the correct response.
He gave the correct response. I was listening to this Vance, J.D. Vance was explaining that the reason that Biden never visited East Palestine, Ohio, is those people there were all Republicans. If they were Democrats, he would go. And I'm thinking that I can understand that. What I don't understand is listening to Laura Ingraham, who says, you know, blacks aren't voting for us. And the sentence, maybe I get some more black votes if I in the next election, if they nominate me. She says, well, I don't blame them for distrusting us. You know, after the way we have treated them, I can't think of anything the Republicans did to mistreat blacks recently. But that is the way people at Fox News and the conservative establishment thinks. If people are not on our side, there must be something wrong with us.
But you know, Paul, you know what? I think even though it's really dumb of them to think that way, in a way, you might not want to be quite as generous as I'm being, but maybe that reflects a goodness about them that they're projecting on others because they wouldn't act that way toward their enemies unless their enemies really upset them. So they think if people are upset at us, I must have really upset them. What they're not realizing is these people don't act the way you do. That's the problem.
You're actually right.
That's the issue here. They don't act the way you do. All right, let me end, Paul, with my, unless you have further denunciations to make. I don't want to cut those up.
I think I've denounced them sufficiently for this
afternoon. Okay, good. All right. Well, I'm going to make my closing appeal that I always make to folks. And I know some of you are just going to pay no attention to what I'm saying. Now, look, I have not steered you folks wrong before. And this is not going to be the first time. Chronicles Magazine is where I wrote my very first article 30 years ago this year. And their judgment has not improved since then. Okay, it's going to be this, the same type of stuff, but you'll enjoy it. And you can get it at chroniclesmagazine.org. And if you choose, you can go old school and get a physical magazine that you can sit in your recliner and read like a normal person. So check it out, chroniclesmagazine.org. Paul, thank you so much as always.
And thank you for having me on.
And thank you, ladies and gentlemen.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.